I'm Paul Sullivan, your host on the Company of Dads podcast, where we explore the sweet, sublime, strange, and silly aspects of being a lead dad in a world where men often feel they have to hide, or at least not talk, about their parenting role. I know this from firsthand experience as a lead dad to my three girls, three dogs, three cats, and somewhat remarkably, three fish who are still alive. I did this all while managing my career and striving to be an above average husband. One thing I know for sure about being a lead dad is it's not a normal role. You're not doing what dads have traditionally done, going to work and leaving the parenting to mom or someone else. Nor are you always welcome into the world where moms are the primary caregivers. But here at the Company of Dads, our goal is to shake all that off and focus on what really matters: family, friendship, finance, and fun. Today, my guest is Brad Klontz, TikTok influencer, money doctor, and lead dad to his two sons. I first met Brad in 2009. During the financial crisis, when his comments about money that ended up in my New York Times column got both of us a lot of hate mail. He and I have continued talking. We ended up doing some research together. And when he was at Kansas State, I went out there to have my financial thinking analyzed, complete with electrodes. He's a clinical psychologist by training who has worked with kids and families in Hawaii schools for over 20 years. He now lives in Boulder, Colorado, where he's built a reputation as a leading financial psychologist. As part of that, he went on TikTok to reach a younger generation, and his tongue-in-cheek videos have garnered him more than 5 million likes and 400,000 followers. Brad, welcome to the Company of Dads podcast.
Paul, I'm very excited to be here with you.
How you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. Living the dream.
You are living the dream in Boulder. I love it. One thing I'm setting out to do here with the Company of Dads is to make the role of lead dad normal, not something that causes people to sort of, you know, scrunch up their heads. I want to make it okay for men to take on the caregiver role and work their work around their schedule and support their, you know, spouse in doing it. Now, you're the doctor here. Am I crazy?
Yeah, it is. It's a crazy thing. You know, as thinking about it, as prepping for this interview with you and thinking about my own life and my lead dad status, I realized like I didn't grow up with any model related to this. Like I rarely saw my father. He was a total workaholic, and I don't really have a lot of models to pin it on. So it's something that I feel like I've had to sort of create from scratch and quite alone, which is why what you're doing is so fascinating and interesting.
You know, one of the things I want to delve into here, given your expertise, is how money and masculinity are intertwined and how it speaks to our identity. Maybe you can talk a bit from some of the research you've done and your own sort of experience as to, you know, how strong that money and masculinity bond is.
I think a lot of it has to do with how oriented we are to the traditional roles that have been around for, you know, decades and centuries and generations. I think your attachment to that in terms of your self-esteem, I think that's probably the biggest predictor in terms of how comfortable you are taking, you know, a primary breadwinner status or a shared one, or being the one who's not bringing in as much money into the relationship. So I think a lot of it has to do with your attachment to that traditional role versus your flexibility around how you perceive yourself and your value in your relationship and with your kids and your family.
Are some people just going to be wired to be more open to being a lead dad? Or is there a way we can do some sort of, you know, lead dad boot camp and bring some of those other guys up to speed?
Yeah, I think probably some of it is just how flexible are you in your thinking? How willing are you to go against the grain? Because again, there's not a lot of role models. And so a lot of this has to be constructed on our own or with another group of dads. So I think it's flexibility in thinking. Open-mindedness is probably a huge component of it, because there's no doubt that studies we've done related to this have been mostly around women who are earning more than their male husbands and partners. And some of the pressure they get and stress they get from family and friends and people around them that, you know, you're stepping out of the traditional role and he's stepping out of the traditional role. And so you have to be willing to surround yourself with people who are more open-minded or living, you know, more of a egalitarian approach to parenting, if you will, or you're going to be succumbing to some of that pressure. And a lot of that gets internalized and you start to wonder, am I doing the right thing? Am I living up to the standards that I'm supposed to be living up to?
Yeah. You know, I believe strongly, obviously, in naming things. That's why I should talk about lead dads. But I also, you know, back to those Schoolhouse Rock days when we were kids, you know, knowledge is power. When you look at that survey and the research you've done on the impact of women earning more in the relationship. What are some of the positives that come from that dynamic? And then, of course, what are some of the negatives that come from that dynamic?
Yeah, I think the modeling is good. It's a positive thing that, you know, we can be flexible in our roles, because the bottom line is, and you know this, Paul, too, that many of us are going through multiple socioeconomic statuses throughout our lifetime. And so you might go through periods of time where, you know, you're making more than your female partner, and then it switches, and then a business, you know, crashes and burns, and someone else is carrying the load, or you're funding each other's school. So there's a lot of flexibility in a lot of different circumstances that are happening right now. And so I think the modeling for that for kids is really, really good. The downside is that people report less relationship satisfaction in general. And I think a big part of that has to do with some of that social pressure. And I know this too, it really comes down to this. How do you feel about the role you're taking on? That's really, I think, the determining factor on whether or not you're going to feel good as a stay-at-home dad or stay-home mom or whatever that balance is. It comes down to how you feel about it. And I got to tell you this too, like coming from Hawaii, much more traditional in terms of gender roles. In Boulder, one of the things that's been great is there's so many lead dads over here. So when I'm taking my kids to sports or music class or whatever it is, there's dads in the room with their kids. So it's actually one of the things I really enjoy about being here, because I got to tell you, I purposely put a lot of time into being with my boys, taking care of them. You know, I'm not working on the weekends, and you know, each night I'm a huge part of it, as you know. Yeah. But I felt kind of alone around that in Hawaii, where things are more traditionally oriented. And so I've really enjoyed being around other dads who are lead dads. And I just feel less alone, to be honest.
I mean, you've done so much research on, you know, finding our tribe, as it were, of how we sort of identify with certain groups. I mean, does a place like Boulder, which is more open to different, you know, gender roles around parenting, does that make it easier for men to be the lead dads and women to, you know, fulfill their own potential and however they want to do it?
I think it does. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention some socioeconomic status that really relates to this. I mean, when you are in a lower socioeconomic group or stressed around money, it's tough to show up for your kids, bottom line. I mean, because you need to show up to make money to pay the, you know, pay food, put clothes on their back. So I'm recognizing that, you know, part of my ability to do that is embedded in some economic privilege, to be quite honest, you know, and I know there's more of that in Boulder here too. And so for me, like wealth and what I've really been working for in my own life, wealth to me is owning your time and being able to make decisions on what you're doing with your time that are in line with your values and goals. And I've spent much of my life trying to not be a workaholic and yeah. not, you know, and to show up more for my kids, because that goes back generations in my family. So it's something that I really appreciate, and something I've worked really hard to get is owning more of my time so I can spend it the way I want to, which for me is with my family.
You know, I've always been sort of a pragmatic person. You know that about me. We know it's a long time. But, you know, for me, it just made sense. My wife, you know, she works in asset management, but really she has a very inflexible schedule. If somebody says, I need to talk to you, they need to talk to you now. When I was a journalist for 25 years, I had a very rigid schedule. And so it allowed me, like, I knew when my deadline was and I knew what I had to do. And I could plan somewhere around 90% of my life around it. But I was, you know, pragmatic. And a lot of the other lead dads I've been talking to, they share a similar pragmatism. You know, my wife earns more, I learn less, or my wife has to work X number of hours at the hospital and I can do this. Is pragmatism part of this? Or is it just that, you know, lead dads are wired differently, or they look at parenting differently? Because it was really that pragmatism that drove me to become a lead dad. And then I found out that, you know, this is a lot of fun. I actually really enjoy being the guy taking my girls all around.
Yeah, no, that's a fascinating concept. I feel like it's that pragmatic aspect for me that allows me to do it. Because for me, in my wiring, I do see myself as I wanting, you know, to contribute to the family and make money for the family. I feel that is part of one of the roles I've taken on. My wife also, who's a clinical psychologist also, so she's a high achiever and has a business that she runs too. And, you know, in this last week, where my youngest son got diagnosed with COVID, you know, no symptoms, but we've been doing a lot of juggling. So I'm very pragmatic. So we have a shared schedule and it's like, boom, I'm watching the kid during this period of time while she's working. She's watching the kid during this period of time while I'm working. And I appreciate it. I like it. It's very pragmatic though, because there's a lot of moving parts.
When you have two clinical psychologists in a relationship, do you even bother to argue? I mean, does anybody win, or do you just know all the tricks and you go around?
Yeah, I know. It's you know, we have to actually bring our clinical psychology skills to the relationship because it's not automatic. I'm like, okay, I need to listen. All right. And then of course, and you have a college fund, but you got to have that therapy fund because like, what are the chances that your kids are going to come out of this unscathed?
With two clinical psychologists? Exactly. No way.
Exactly.
Oh boy, that's great. Yeah, one of the interesting things that happened to me when I had this final story run in the New York Times that said, I'm leaving, I'm starting this company. It wasn't named the Company of Dads at that point. It was in my head, but not public. But I talked about it. And people in my town, in my area in Southern Connecticut, guys that I'd known for years, 5-6 years, a few of them came up to me and said, hey, you know, I really like what you're doing. I'd like to be part of it, but could I ask you something? I said, yeah, sure, whatever. Like, I don't want you to name me. Don't use my name. I was like, you know that this is a group, this is a community where like lead dads are going to come together and we're going to drink beer and watch ESPN and do all the things that guys do, but we're just going to be the lead dads who go to ballet. It's okay. We're not like, you know, taking puppies, throwing them in a bag and tossing them into the river. You know, this is not, and like, and they look at me like, yeah, no, just don't use my name. Just be quiet. Why do you think, you know, they want it? They want to be part of this community. They want, you know, the support that the Company of Dads is offering, yet they're not fully comfortable to sort of publicly say, as I have, obviously, that I'm a lead dad and this is what I'm doing and it's awesome. And obviously there are parts that are not awesome, but what do you think holds some of these guys back from, you know, literally like being public with what they're already doing privately?
Yeah, I think it comes down to that traditional gender role stuff, where the further you feel like you're moving from it, the more you're worried about other people looking at you as if you're doing something wrong or you're not showing up in the way you should be showing up. And what's interesting to me in thinking about it too, and you know that I talk a lot about the tribal brain and how that relates to our relationship with money. I think it's kind of a new thing in terms of humanity. I think for 99% of our time on Earth, we were around our kids as fathers. We were in a tribe of 150 people. The kids were with us all the time. They were with the mothers sometimes. They were with us. There wasn't this dad goes off to work for 60 hours a week or 40 and you never see dad. That's a new thing. So I think—
Because like back then, like when you didn't see dad, it was because like a woolly mammoth had eaten dad and you probably weren't going to see him again. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Way back? Yeah. Exactly. It was every day was take your kid to work day. Right. And it's been
and
very
protect
much
him and protect him from a lion. Is that what
that's right. And teach him how to hunt. Right. So I think it's a relatively new thing where we send people off to work like that. But I feel like a lot of it is the social pressure. And in the research we did on women who earn more, that was a big part of it. Like, you know, people will talk, you know, I'm worried that somebody's going to talk bad about my husband, that type of thing. And so I think it's really real.
Yeah. If you think about, you know, company or you think about the military, they hire all kinds of different people who come in and you work for, you know, Apple and not everybody's designing the next iPhone. People are doing all kinds of different ones. Some people are selling them. Some people are coming up with the advertising. Some people are doing the marketing, public relations, and everybody is looking. If you're Apple, you want your employees to sort of be feeling the highest and best use of their time. You want them to fulfill their potential. If, you know, in our personal lives, the highest and best use of our time is for one person to be out there, you know, working in a less flexible career. And that happens to be the mom, and the other person to take, you know, on more of the parenting roles and work his work schedule around that and be the dad. Why is it easier for us to accept those different roles at work? You know, the head of marketing is not going to design the next iPhone at Apple. Why is it easier for us to accept those roles at work and more challenging, not just at home, but in our community more broadly?
Yeah, I think it's modeling. And, you know, so much of what kids learn is not by what they're told, but by what they observe. And so our sense of identity related to our gender orientation and what we've observed growing up, it has a really profound impact on us, even on a deeply subconscious level. And there's a sense that this is what I need to do to be who I am. And the big irony here too, Paul, is we're talking about, you know, your lead dad status or lead mom status is very time limited. We're not talking about this is who you are for your entire life. It's a, and I look at it this way, like I know when my kids were younger, I'm kind of like, hurry up, you know, hurry up so I can go to sleep through the night. And I've got a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old, and I want time to go extremely slow right now. Like, I really want to be.
Yeah, but that's because they can sleep through the, they can sleep through the night now. It's really, you got to get past that hurdle. Cause like after that first year, you're like, oh, all right. A 4-year-old is really fun.
Yeah. Right, right. After, you know, when you first start into it, you're like, please let me go to work so I can take a nap and drink some coffee. But yeah, no, I mean, for me too, it's like, it's a time limited thing. This isn't like you get this opportunity or you're stuck with this role, however you want to look at it forever. This is a very time limited thing. And for me, I find that really energizing because this is where I want to invest my time because they're not going to be under my care for very long in terms of the scope of my entire life and what I'm doing.
And what's the impact, Ben, on, I mean, your career is going fantastically, but what's the impact, Ben, on your work? Or is it just the type of work you do that you're able to balance, you know, being a lead dad and being a real, you know, top financial psychologist as well?
Yeah. So I've worked really hard to have some flexibility in my schedule and some passive income. So I don't have to worry about paying the bills if I take the afternoon off to spend time or take my kids skiing or whatever. So I've really, by the way, that strategy, since you've known me for a while, since in my 20s, like I am going to own my time. So I you know, that is a big deal to me, being able to do that. And the big part too is for me is the pragmatic thing is I have to schedule in and I have to be much more efficient. So for example, today, like I had 4 hours and then the other 4 hours, I'm going to go watch my youngest while my wife works. And so I have to become much more efficient and much more flexible on when I can get the work done. So sometimes I'm up late at night doing it. Sometimes I'm up early in the morning, but being there with the kids for me anyway, even sort of selfishly, I know this is a limited time and they're so precious. And so it's something I purposely dive into and enjoy.
I know exactly what you're saying. My calendar looks like something that my 4-year-old drew because it's all color coded. And you're just like, okay, I know that blue means this and green means this and yellow means this. And that's, you know, just to kind of, you know, go one after another. One thing I'm thinking, you know, the response to the Company of Dads, it's been fortunately, sort of very positive from 3 of the 4 groups. And the fourth is not negative, but the positive has been, you know, men who identify as lead dads, who they're lead dads, they want to be part of this. Awesome. Working moms who have a lead dad at home. They're like, yeah, this is great. I want to sign my husband up. He's super helpful. This works. HR executives, HR people at all kinds of different companies, they've been very positive because, you know, come on in, please, and talk to our workforce, explain how this works. And that's great. But the one group that I won't say negative, but more questioning, and that is, you know, working moms, senior women who are in the workforce who do not have a lead dad at home, who have that, you know, we've read a gajillion bits of research on the second shift. And, you know, even if, you know, the husband and the wife both work, and even if the wife has a more strenuous job than the husband, you know, a lot of research shows that she's still coming home and doing the bulk of the parenting. And so what that group is asking, you know, part of it is cynical, like, yeah, good for you, buddy, I don't care. But another part of it is genuinely questioning of and asking, how can you help me make my husband more of a lead dad? Now, he may be doing 5%. And the way I look at it, if you get from 5% to 25%, that's enormous. If you got from 5% to 45%, it'd be an almost unrecognizable change. But how, when you think about strategies that the listeners can sort of employ, either, you know, the moms who are hearing this or the dads who think, hey, maybe I do, you know, I can't be the full on lead dad, but I like to have some more lead dad qualities. What are those strategies that you'd suggest that they employ to become more of a lead dad?
Yeah, so that is fascinating because I think that group that you're getting some of the cynical pushback is the group that most desperately would benefit from, from this organization, because I think what's happening there is that the father, their husband probably doesn't have a good role model, like doesn't really know how this works. Like, you know, you want me to take the kids to the birthday party. Well, I'm going to go there. It's just going to be a bunch of moms and me, and I'm going to feel out of place. I'm going to feel it's going to be kind of weird. I mean, it's just all of that sort of self-talk going on. And I think a big part of it is like, it's one of the things that makes me really excited about it, Paul. And I want to hang out and I want to drink beer. And what I love to do is go to a house where there's other guys and they bring their kids too, you know, because that's the other thing that I don't think we've done traditionally in our culture. And so for me anyway, I think the best intervention is probably modeling and the social media. It's one of the things I love that you're doing related to this effort is social media posts around what's happening. And you see these gatherings with men and their kids and talking about it, talking about your role as dad, something that's really, really important.
One last question for you. You talked about modeling and I know this as a dad, like I could talk to him blue in my face, but if I'm not doing, if I'm telling my kids, you got to be grateful. And then I'm a complete jerk when I go out and order a cup of coffee to the person, give me a cup of coffee, my kids are going to call me out on it. But when you think about modeling around, you know, financial behavior, and you and I are both wired the same and that we're super savers. But when you think about the modeling that a lead dad is doing in his role for the financial behavior of his son or daughter, what is some of the key modeling that that lead dad needs to be doing, even, you know, if he's not the primary breadwinner, if he wants to impart really good lessons to his son or daughter?
I think it's first of all, it's taking on that responsibility, like looking at it like this is something I need to do, because it's not, you know, your kids are going to learn nothing from you just leaving and coming back, you know, and bills get paid, that kind of thing. So I'm always trying to think, how can I model this? How can I structure it? How can I make it tangible? And so just a quick example, I have an 8-year-old who has a lawn care business. And by the way, he wasn't very excited about that at all. I made him create a lawn care business. And we went to the neighbors and we're mowing lawns and he's complaining about it. But he's starting to get into it because now he's making money. And I set it up so that the neighbors actually handed him money. Like, here's right. The money. Thank you.
Not a Venmo. They actually
exactly.
Get
no,
the real dollars.
I want
dollars.
Him to yeah. touch the cash, yeah. And, you know, because he's looking at it, he's like, wow, look at this. And so now that he has the cash, now I'm like, okay, so now we're going to learn about investing. And so just last night, I'm putting him to bed. He's like, Dad, how are my investments doing? You know, so we look them up. And then he got really upset because the market's crashed a bit. But then I get to talk to him about that, right? So, yeah. I mean, for me, it's doing that on purpose, modeling it, talking it through, having those discussions. But I think first and foremost, it's like, this is something that I need to take on. This is something I need to teach my children. I think that it starts with that.
Dr. Brad Klontz, thanks for being a guest on the Company of Dads podcast. I really enjoyed it.
My pleasure, Paul, as always. Thank you.